Welcome to Sports 56 Happy Hour with Johnny Radio. The first hour of the show is brought to you by MemphisMoldInspector.com. Now, here's your host, Johnny Radio himself, John Harden.
What it is back, what it is, no, I what it is back, what it is, back. I gotta go. Got my money changed, but you still can't lay it down, paint it on you.
Yo. I am not John Harden. This is Landon Schmidt filling in for John Harden this morning, but I've got with me the historian Jay Ham, Darian Newsome. He might join us at some point, at some degree. We don't know. We don't know what today will hold.
We don't know what we have in store today. No. We just know that we are here.
We are here, and there's a lot of sports to talk about, and this is just going to be a good day. They don't call it happy hour for no reason. I mean, this is going to be an interesting trip. It's going to be an interesting ride. I do know this much when it comes to this show, that when it comes to talking golf, when it comes to talking the PGA Tour, the Masters, anything like that, this is typically the show that does not talk about that. That spends maybe the least amount of time talking about golf, because John has told me on multiple occasions that he's not a golf guy, but he can drive the ball worth, you know, $1 million.
Even when we thought about doing Masters update the other day, I was like, you know what, y'all? Go to Bluff City Media, or Grind City Media, and check out Chris Vernon.
Yeah.
Vernon's got the best Masters update. Yeah.
There's a lot of platforms out there that'll update you on the golf world and tell you all the things that you need to know about golf. And fortunately for you listeners today, I'm one of those people. I mean, I don't think I'll be able to do it as well as the other guys, but I did have my eyes all over the Masters this past weekend. A really good showing out there for all the guys involved. Of course, we have our winner, we have our champion in Rory going back to back, and the dude would just not be denied. He led each and every single day of the Masters, eventually winning. I mean, it was his to lose. He kind of had a few scares there getting paired up with Cam Young, which, I mean, you know, Cam Young, I don't know if you guys are also listening to us in the afternoons with Sports Time as we make our golf picks with John Goen, Brian Dacus, and Brett Norsworthy. But I had Cam Young to win this whole thing, and man, he was right at the cusp, but could not get it done. But still a really good showing from him. Scotty Scheffler, huge shout out to him. Since 1942, he became the first golfer in 84 years to go bogey-free golf in the last 36 holes in the final round of the Masters, which is absolutely incredible. It's unfortunate that he could not sink that birdie at the very end to continue that streak, to send it to a playoff with Rory McIlroy, but still, nonetheless, a huge shout-out to him, but the biggest shout-out to Rory McIlroy for winning this year's Masters, going back-to-back, and I mean, you kind of saw it on the court, Augusta National, because I know they don't call it a golf course. I mean, you saw it out there. I mean, his demeanor, he looked relaxed. He finally got the monkey off of his back from last year of not being, the Masters always being that one that eluded him. He finally got that done with, and so, I mean, he was just on top of his game the entire weekend, so a huge shout-out to him. A really interesting weekend with the names that were up in the top. You kind of had some flashbacks. Kurt Kitayama was a little bit out there and kind of mixing things up, getting in the top. I think one of the most impressive showings was Justin Rose, which Justin Rose should have a little bit of a hometown heart here. He's the guy that won the FedEx St. Jude Championship last year, had a really good showing this year. So maybe a good year of golf to look out for Justin Rose this year. I think Cam's going to be one of those guys to keep looking for at all of the majors going forward. Scotty Scheffler, of course, is always going to be the dude who's going to be sneaking up on you. He's going to be playing extraordinarily well. But one of the things that – so if you just listened to Wolo and Friends, talked a lot about the Masters, and this is something that I would love to talk with Mo here in just a little bit to kind of get his opinion on it. But it was really, really interesting to hear, because he asked just about every single guest that he had today. He had three guests today. He asked every single one of them that he Googled who the top 10 – just a quick Google search of who are the top 10 greatest golfers in the history of the PGA tournament, whatever it is, who they are. And, you know, you listed out all the names. And the question was, does Rory belong in that top 10? So right off the rip, I said, yes. I said, if you go back-to-back at the Masters, you've completed the career Grand Slam. There's a lot of people that have played really, really well. Well, now that I've actually had a chance to kind of sit back, review, kind of look over all of these players and who they are, in these top 10, the person that they have listed as the 10th, and Gene Sarazen, he has 7 major wins and completed a career Grand Slam. That's who they have listed as the number 10 guy right now. And with Rory, I know he had a long streak in his career where he did not win a single major, where he was just a big ghost town for him. But it also hit me too that in these top 10 people, and I'll go through real quick and list who they are. They have number 1 as Jack Nicklaus. They have number 2 Tiger Woods, Ben Hogan, Bobby Jones, Sam Snead, Gary Player, Tom Watson, Walter Hagen, Arnold Palmer, and Gene in those top 10. And I was sitting here thinking, if you think about who is the best current golfer in the world, it's whoever the world number 1 is right now, and that's Scottie Scheffler. If Scottie Scheffler is not even being mentioned right now in that kind of a list, then I don't think that Rory is just about there just yet. Now, you can compare both of their careers right now, and you know Rory's been in the game a little bit longer, but Scottie right now I think is undeniably the number 1 golfer. I mean, he's still number 1 on OWGR, so very, very interesting. I don't know.
When you break down lists like those, it's always fun, especially for a guy like me, because I like to look at the perspective that whoever's making the list is coming from.
Yeah.
Like my NBA gold list, for instance, which I don't believe in a singular GOAT. I believe that everyone that's a GOAT pretty much is on a tier. And they separate themselves away from everybody. But who's on that tier may vary and differ from who your top 15 or top 20 may be.
Well, I definitely have a different look on things.
Right, you know what I'm saying? So it's just one of those. That's why I don't look at those as more of like arguments. I look at the fun comparisons from perspectives.
Yeah.
And how people viewed it, how you viewed it, watch it growing up, the whole deal. What kind of, just, you know, like mine will be different from yours. Yours will be different from Greg Gaston's.
Right.
And so on and so forth.
And to that point as well, a lot of it has to deal with, like, the nostalgia feel. It's who you grew up with.
It's who you grew up
with. So for me, and this is just true, I could say, for a lot of people, I grew up with Tiger being the dominant force in golf. And unequivocally, I mean, the dude was dominant for 20-plus years. I mean, the guy is absolutely phenomenal. That's why he's in the list as number 1 or 2 of all time. I mean, interchangeable, maybe regarded downright as the number 1 golfer who's ever played the sport in Tiger Woods. But that's also like who I grew up with. And so that's also kind of the things is like whatever you grew up with is what you have more of an affinity for. So for me, obviously, and you know, this was actually a little bit before my time, but this is really, really minor and basic argument. But it's like the same thing with like current NBA logos. Growing up, one of my favorite games of all time, and maybe you can relate to this, maybe you can. I had a Sega Dreamcast, and I played NBA 2K like it was
the original 2K.
Oh my goodness. I played it left and right. It's where I grew up with my favorite team, the Portland Trailblazers, because they were incredible. I can name you their starting five at any point. I can name you some of their substitutes that I put on the court at all times. But it was like, that's what I grew up with seeing the way that they played, seeing the courts, the logos, and everything like that. And then you're looking at today's modern day, and it's like, man, everything is so minimalistic. Everything is so basic. Everything's got to be a circle. Everything's got to look like a basketball. Everything's got to be, you know, take away all the fanciness and just let it fly. So not a huge fan of that. That's also why, I mean, I'm going to throw this out there too. And I think this is unequivocally a fact. That's why Tobey Maguire is the best Spider-Man. Tobey Maguire is the best Spider-Man. He's the one that really kind of kickstarted superhero movies as they are. Best looking suit, best portrayal of a Spider-Man. Incredible. But it's also who I grew up with. So, of course, I'm going to have a lot of personal bias about all that stuff. But still, with all that being said, to your point, it is going to be heavily involved on people's perspective and what they see. But as far as Rory being a top 10 player of all time, I don't think he's there yet, especially if Scotty's not even being considered for that role just yet. So something to ask Mo Schefter here in a little bit, because I know he's all on the golf stuff too. He's all about the golf game as well. And of course, you know, if you talk to Mo, you have to talk NFL.
The man tried to have a golf watch along this weekend, and I don't think anybody tapped in with him.
He should have told me. I would have watched it with him.
I think, and he kind of threw it out there almost last minute. So it was like, yeah. Mo, you know, you got to do that one early. We could have promoted that one for you, Mo.
Could have promoted it. Well, you know, never say never. It's not like this was the last major that was going to be played this year. So there's a long golf season ahead of us too. But this is one thing about the Masters that was a little bit different for me this year, is kind of like when you talk about Augusta National and you talk about the Masters, it is usually regarded in such, like, it's almost esteemed as like the holy grail of golf. It's untouchable.
Just like, the way that you mentioned the gallery,
yes,
and the fairway, and not the golf course.
No, yeah, not the golf course. It's Augusta National, and they're not fans, they're patrons.
And it's
not the rough, it's the first chip or something,
right?
Like that.
I actually saw a list over the weekend. This is from like late 70s where what the announcers should say versus what they shouldn't say.
Right, right. And it's all esteemed in such this high honor. But still, this year, I felt like there was maybe a little bit of a double standard here. There was, I mean, it to a degree, leading up to the Masters starting, it almost felt like a UFC event. And the fact of all of these celebrities, all of these, you know, people who have social media influence, were all out there. I mean, look, who doesn't love Kevin Hart? Who doesn't love a good comedic segment? But what on earth is he doing out there dressed up in a caddy's thing, trying to hit on a par three course and then shanks it in the middle of the water? What are all of these celebrities doing out there? I guess it's to draw more eyes to Augusta National and get the Masters a little bit more exposure, but it's the Masters. It is the pinnacle of what golf is.
Well, here's the thing with that. Even prior to the emergence and dominance of Tiger Woods, you had Happy Gilmore.
You did have Happy Gilmore.
And so,
but even he didn't touch Augusta National.
He didn't touch Augusta National, but the way that they tried to frame that movie with the gold jacket and the whole deal that way, I get why they did it that way, but it's also fun at the same time where we're looking at that holy grail, uh-huh, and that holy grail is kind of being violated by just normal society stuff that people
really
like us that just don't normally take part to.
Yeah.
This is why they put those lists out for what to say and what not to say.
Yes, exactly. So, but it was also interesting to me because what I noticed out there, or what I was told rather by my little brother, shout out Caleb, is that Dude Perfect apparently was able to shoot an all sports golf battle at Augusta National. And look, I love Dude Perfect as much as the next person, but I would think for a golf course, like, yes, like you want to get that exposure out there. Yes, you want to draw eyes to these things, but I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think when it comes to the platform that is Augusta National, that you let it be utilized in that kind of way. I mean, what captures us about this thing, about this golf course, is the fact that it is so beautiful and so untouchable, all of these things in between. I mean, I don't even know. And who better to talk about that with than Darian Newsom, because Darian apparently knows a lot of things and really wanted to call in and talk about all of these things. So, Darian, what's up?
How are you, gentlemen?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
All right. First of all, great Masters Sunday. I'm going to start with the par three contest because I just heard you say, why is Kevin Hart there, so on and so forth?
Yes.
So for us
O-heads,
I have to defend us O-heads because John and I are both not there. This goes back to Bill Murray, sir. He was an original comedian that started hanging around the Masters and giving us the laughs that we needed before things got serious, so to speak. So all Kevin Hart is doing is just kind of, he was passed the baton from great comedians like that. So that's why you saw the whole Kevin Hart deal. It was
I'm not just pinning it all on him. I just talked about too, how I learned that Dude Perfect shot an all sports golf battle on Augusta National. And I'm sitting here thinking, look, I love Dude Perfect as much as the next person, but I was always under the impression that you leave a place like that alone and you don't utilize it for those kind of things. Like, it's a clean golf course. You use it to golf on, obviously, but then you turn around and you're allowing these guys to shoot a YouTube video on top of it where, I mean, like, they even, I believe they even got rid of blimps, right? Because they only have the drone footage and stuff like that to barely hover above the trees to capture the essence of this beautiful golf course. So, I don't know. I just feel like it's kind of...
Oh, times you sound, are... I have to stop you. You sound, I don't even know, what is it, G-N-I-J-K, you're G-N something, stop it. The par three is also for family, sir.
I'm not just talking about the par three, I'm talking about the whole essence that is Augusta National, brother.
That man, okay. pick an alphabet letter for your generation.
But anyway, but listen, let me get back to my rant. My rant wasn't about that. My rant
ran,
is
ran
totally
on, ran
about
ran on.
My rant is totally about this Rory and this top 10 deal. You and I just had a digital conversation about how I got to 16. So after I looked at the list, I actually think we probably can honestly fit Rory in the 14, 15 slot somewhere in there, because I don't think he's even better than Scotty, because on yesterday I would dare to say he bagged into a championship. Let me tell you how I see that, fellas. Yesterday, or over the weekend, Scotty Scheffler became the only player to shoot a bogey-free weekend throughout that tournament. That means no champion had done it. And the reason I say no champion had done it is because you have to be, I guess, lock and step even on that Thursday and Friday, which Scotty wasn't. So if the sun had shined on Scotty in any way, shape, form, or fashion on that Thursday or Friday, where I think he shot a 74 and I forget his other number, but they were nowhere near what he did over the weekend, he wins that tournament. So then to take it in real time, you have Rory basically putting the ball, he almost put the ball out of play, first of all, coming down the stretch. And had he landed that ball in the Magnolias or closer to a tree, he would have definitely dropped another shot, and that would have led to a playoff. That's one. Scotty on 17, absolutely going for it. He had to. So, it almost was kind of like that Tiger shot where the Nike ball showed. That should have been that kind of moment for Scotty. So I agree with Dave Woloshin, or Wolo and Freeze. I was listening to him. He said, hey, maybe it was just Rory's time to win. But there were so many opportunities for Scotty to take that event and to have the mental fortitude to shoot what he did on Thursday and Friday, and then come back Saturday and Sunday, bogey-free. Jason Day had opportunities. Cam had opportunities. There were so many
Justin Rose had opportunities. About him.
Justin Rose, had you said who was going to win that tournament on Friday, we would not have said Scotty. As a matter of fact, we were saying, what is wrong with Scotty? Mm-hmm. And by the end of the weekend, hopefully golf novices, aficionados, we said, my God, Scotty, because that's what I did. Had that ball fell on 17, or if Rory gets shaky knees or whatnot, and we go to a playoff, I 1,000% believe Scotty wins that tournament.
I'm with you there, and I was a little bit disappointed that he didn't force that playoff for the Masters at the very end.
It was the golf gods, man. That ball was so close to goal.
It was. But also at the same token, I mean, Scotty, like you just mentioned, started off the tournament on the wrong foot. I mean, yes, he was in contention after day one, but his Friday was horrible. I think he shot like a 75, 76, something like that.
Yeah,
it was
not
a great showing. But then, of course, as he does in Scotty fashion, he comes back around, played that bogey-free golf, first person to do so in 84 years since 1942. Those are the last person who ever did that. An incredible showing, but that's exactly what Scotty does. If Scotty starts off that tournament on the right foot like Rory did, then by all means, it's in his hands.
I don't even think he had to start off on the right foot.
He needed to start off better because Rory came out of the gate
a little bit better. He got to think he finished second, brother. So So if he shoots two under, you see what I'm saying? If he's a midget better, he wins. He doesn't even have to be that great on that three. That's why I say Scotty.
Right. But I just think coming out of the gate, Scotty, I think, needed to be a little bit better than what he was. Definitely have a better Friday showing, because if he does that, then absolutely all of this stuff is for naught. But now we're also getting in the what-if game of, like, you know, what if Justin Rose just hit hole-in-ones on every single course? Of course he's going to win.
But that's what golf guys do. But I totally get you. And I honestly believe, like what you said, if he gets off on the right foot or feet, mm-hmm. I honestly believe he wins that tournament by 4 or 5 strokes. That's what I'm saying. If he's just a little bit better, there's a playoff. But if he gets off on the right foot, as you're alluding to, that tournament's not even close. J-Ham, I love you guys. I got to go deal with Mom. But I just couldn't take the Scotty. Not Scotty. It wasn't Scotty slander. But Rory's not.
I wasn't slandering anybody. Yet.
Not you. I know.
Just stop accusing me of things, Darian. You go. Go tend to.
All right. Love y'all, guys. But yeah, Master Sunday was awesome yesterday, y'all.
Master Sunday was a lot of fun. Thanks for calling in, Darian. You're always welcome here because we like you.
Peace. Love y'all.
See ya. That's Darian. He's usually around. He does a lot of stuff. We like him. He's very nice. But yeah, no. I think he's very, very right. I think that tournament kind of gone a bunch of different ways. But at the end of the day, Rory was not going to be denied. He came out of the gate. And I remember, I mean, you were starting off producing for Wello for me on Friday. Mm-hmm. And I gave you that stat line of champions that came out and led on the first day where they ended up. Now, of course, you had Jack Nicklaus who had his back-to-back in 65-66. But all of those guys ended T2. I think there was the one anomaly where what was his name? I can't remember. It was some Spanish fellow that finished T14. He was the anomaly. Everybody else finished T2. You had Jack who finished outright winner. I mean, you start off the tournament looking really good. He carries that all the way through. Rory was just not going to be denied. It was incredible to watch.
And before he won last year, what was his drought on majors prior to that? Like 11 years or something like that?
It was a long time. I feel like his last major was like early 2010s, like 2013, 14, 15, maybe even there. I don't know. It was a long drought where it was Rory killing it for a few years. Mm. Then the gap, and now seems like Rory's back and he's winning majors.
Kind of remind me of John Elway getting the Super Bowls, where he got a handful of them early, and then he had that gap in time where they didn't, and then he gets to the back end of his career.
And then they came out with new jerseys.
New jerseys,
new logo that he hated.
New jerseys, and then he also had Terrell Davis. It's something that he didn't have before.
Terrell Davis, Shannon Sharp, Rod Smith, Ed McCaffrey. Goodness, the team was loaded. Right. Come on.
And he
now.
Got him, too, on his way out the door.
Oh,
so
you ain't kidding.
Just coming back and kind of getting in that after having that long drought, that's what made me think of John Elway. Not saying that he's on his way to being done, but just in terms of the drought.
I agree with you there. But regardless, I think it was a really fun Masters weekend. I thought it was really, really good. I mean, there was I did learn this from Dave at the very tail end of his show, where he was talking about these two guys who on the tour actually got removed, Sergio Perez and Rob McIntyre, for, I guess, bad behavior, were both removed from the tour. Of course, they weren't really in contention, but I guess, you know, they had to leave. And I also heard there was a little soundbite that I found on the Instagrams where, now usually this happens in like other tours, especially the Waste Management Open or Waste Management Championship, whatever it's called, where people will hit a drive and then people will just yell out things. Have you noticed that before, Jay?
Only on Happy Gilmore.
Well, it happens a few times. One of the most popular things that people would yell out was like mashed potatoes or something.
Okay.
Something obscure that has nothing to do with the sport, whatever. That, of course, is strictly prohibited at the Masters, as it should be, and really all golf tournaments.
I thought that would probably be a misdemeanor in Augusta National.
Yeah, I think it would be. I think he might. So there was this guy there. He's likely going to receive a lifetime ban for doing so. I actually caught the video where he yelled out after somebody hit a drive. He said, "Give me back my son," which, I mean, you know, once again, that doesn't really have anything to do with the sport, but I would imagine he spent the night in jail and will be receiving a lifetime ban.
If John Harden didn't make that trip to do that, he paid that guy to do that, because that's one of his favorite obligatory things, just to yell out, give me back my son.
Give me back my son. Yep, he yelled it just like that. So also one of the more interesting things, but still, Augusta National held to a high regard, a very high standard, as it should be, because it is a tradition unlike any other. We're going to take a break here in classic John fashion. We went over our time, but not too far over. I think we're still doing pretty good.
We're keeping, as far as we're concerned, it's keeping everything on track.
Yeah, we're just trying to keep everything on track. Still got a lot to talk about on the other side. I want to talk to Mo about a little bit of golf things, and then we got to talk about this NFL draft because it is right around the corner. I want to see what his thoughts are on these top 10 people and if there's anybody that we need to keep an eye on that we're really not looking for. But all of that comes your way. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Unlock your...
Now, back to Sports 56 Happy Hour with Johnny Radio. This hour brought to you by MemphisMoldInspector.com. Here once again is Johnny Radio.
They can't keep Johnny down. We haven't yet built the man.
Well, Jay, I know last week I talked a little bit about the UFL and how I seem to still be the only person who's on top of the UFL. Does Mo watch the UFL? Do you know if he's involved in that at all?
You know what? I don't think he does, but I think you can be convinced to tap in.
I don't know, man, because the UFL, I think this is the best product they've had since they relaunched the XFL, the USFL, combined everything. I think this is the best product that they've had on the field this year.
Right.
The games have been incredible. The players that they have out there are really, really good. And it has just been, it's been a spectacle to watch and enjoy. Have you seen any updates? Did you catch any highlight reels or anything like that over the weekend?
I caught a little bit of the series of the Dallas game on Saturday.
Dude, Dallas is good this year. They kind of had a little bit of a drop off. I actually just talked about this on Wolo. I gave them a rust on our precious metals. The Columbus Aviators, their, I guess at this point, this is going to be their former head coach, was Ted Ginn Jr., a really good wide receiver with the NFL for a while. He was actually arrested for a DUI in Dallas the night before their game against the Renegades. So Memphis's own Todd Haley steps in and becomes the new interim head coach for this team and actually performed really, really well. In my breakdown of the Columbus Aviators, they have a really good dual threat quarterback, really good dual threat quarterback, and they had a really good rushing attack. I think they had three total guys who were leading the league in rushing yards. But they actually performed really, really well against the Renegades, only losing by 5 to the number one team in the UFL right now, led by Austin Reed, who now has, I believe it's somewhere along the lines of I have it right here. 763 passing yards and 9 TDs on the year. He is way out in front of everybody in regards to everything else going on right now. But that's a really good team. Tyler Vaughn, their number one wide receiver right now. I guarantee you he is going to get a shot in the NFL next year. Maybe it could be this season. I don't know, but he is good.
I got a kick out of this Friday when you mentioned the Columbus Aviators, but you said they can go with the ground attack.
Yeah, it is a little bit ironic. They're the Aviators, yet they have a really good ground attack. But I guess they're trying to turn that around. The Aviators, led by Jalen McClendon, really good dual threat quarterback there. But he also had himself a great game as well against the Renegades. The other team to keep a lookout for is the Orlando Storm, led by quarterback Jack Plummer, 672 passing yards, 6 TDs. They are the only two undefeated teams right now in the UFL. So two teams to keep a lookout for, for sure.
And these are Friday and Saturday pretty much, right?
Yeah, yeah. Friday and Saturday. I think they got a
prime time slot on Friday, I'm sure.
Yeah, they do. I think it's like a 7 o'clock for us on Fox.
On Fox,
they usually have a prime time game.
I'll be looking out for them.
It's just something extra that's out there, yeah. And it's something extra to at least keep your eye on.
This is true. And as long as it's competitive and it's cool,
competitive. All right. Tua's brother. Tua Tagovailoa's brother, Taulia Tagovailoa.
One that played at Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One that played at Maryland. He was in the Arena League football for a little bit. Finally got his opportunity with the Houston Gamblers. Went up against the DC Defenders and got absolutely destroyed in their game. I think it was 45-7. And DC, I mean, you knew it was bad when DC opened that game with Deion Jackson, their running back, breaking off for a 60-yard touchdown run to kick off the game. And then it did not slow down from there at all. They actually had an incredible defensive performance from Derek Robertson. I'm following this XFL analyst page or whatever that like gives you the stat line and everything like this. I'll just preface all this by saying I did not anticipate to be this heavily invested in the UFL this year that I am. Football. I love it.
That's what I was just about to tap into. You're tapping into that in the same way that people look at me funny, but I talk about unrivaled with women's basketball. I'm like, I love 3-on-3. Yeah. And they doing it in full court fashion. It's a faster paced game, and it's like there's no garbage players that are playing in the unrivaled league. These are the best women's players in the game. Not all of them, but the ones that are there. They're a collection of some of the best.
Right.
And it's a brand of basketball. I like the big three. I like when in the summertime when TBT comes around, I'm watching that.
Absolutely.
So I can get on board with you and how you're tapping into and investing into this UFL deal.
Because clearly basketball is your sport.
Yeah.
Football is my sport. Right. And I'm all over the football.
And I don't mind watching an alternative brand of football that's not the NFL, even if it's not football season. It's like, oh, it's cool. It's something. It gives you something.
Springtime football, it's got you something on the TV, and the product is looking really, really good this year. It really, really is. But with these guys, with DC, they have. That's what I was going to mention was the back when the NFL and I've seen so many people have complaints about why did they get rid of this. But when they did the stat line for like a standout player, they would have, you know, like their name up top, then their number, and then their like little stats or whatever of like, you know, Matthew Stafford, you know, 455 yards, 6 TDs, 0 interceptions, and a win or whatever. And it was like that little picture that they would post on their pages. Everybody's like, why are we getting rid of these things? Those looked awesome. They told you the whole story. They were really, really, and they were fantastic. So the UFL, XFL, whatever you want to call it, both of these guys, they turn around and they're doing this. And so I saw this with the DC Defenders. The defensive player of the game, absolutely, was Derek Robertson, who recorded 5 tackles, 2 sacks, and 2 tackles for loss in their game. An incredible defensive performance for him, but also, when it comes to that style of play and whatever, if you're winning by that big of a dominating fashion, then of course, it's going to look really, really good. And I mentioned this last week too. I'm still trying to get my finger on the pulse of what exactly the Houston Gamblers are all about. I still don't really understand them fully of who exactly they are, what their strengths are. I mean, they just got slapped by the defending champions of the UFL, but it should be interesting. Definitely something to keep an eye on. I don't know if John's going to talk about this more when he comes back or anything like that.
We'll find something to gamble on. We'll get John involved.
I'm telling you right now, it's going to be interesting to gamble on. I would say going forward, look, they did. I don't know if they covered that point spread against the Aviators. I can't remember what it was, but the Dallas Renegades are good enough to where if you bet money on them, I would say 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a good payout because that team is really good. It's led by Austin Reed. Tyler Vaughns is incredible. I mean, they have a really, really good team. But more on that later on the line. Right now, we've got our man Terry Davis. Now, you know Terry Davis. He loves himself some Memphis. He talks about the Memphis Tigers. He talks about the Memphis Grizzlies. And there is a lot to talk about when it comes to kind of the season being wrapped up, looking forward to what's going on coming down the pike. So first question for you, Terry Davis, what did you make of the incredible tank-off matchup between the Jazz and the Grizzlies to really kind of conclude and sum up what the Memphis Grizzlies were this season?
Man, they lost by 20, and then Dallas won by 20. So that means Memphis moved up one. So that's great.
That's a win. That's a win for us.
That's a win. At least you get one more ping pong ball, which is always a good when you're in a lottery.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So now, if you could dream with me for just a second, because we saw something that a lot of people like to put on their conspiracy hats and say, okay, this is not exactly normal. This is not exactly we didn't see this coming. But last year, the Dallas Mavericks somehow winning the lottery, getting that number one pick. Let's just say, and let's just dream for a second that the Memphis Grizzlies get in that slot and somehow, some way, get themselves in the position to be the number one pick. Who do you like for the Grizzlies to target, and what is their biggest need heading into next year?
It's one of the biggest things. The first of all, it's a lot of what you need to do. Memphis needs to be rooted against Orlando. You need Orlando to lose the first game and then lose the second game, and Memphis get two lottery shots at first prize. But with the long, you want Cam Bridges to change his mind to, look, I'm going to the draft and hopefully you get him, because he thinks they're impressive what Memphis opens up, how they run and how they run the organization.
Yeah, well, Terry, we might have to reconnect with you here in just a second. It's getting coming along really, really robotic here, so I really want to hear what you were saying, but it is a little bit difficult, so we might need to reconnect with you here in just a second, unless you've found a new place. I don't know if you're standing in a dead zone or something like that. But
I'm just in the bottom of the FedEx Forum.
Oh, well, perfect. Well, wherever you are, stay right there, because now I can hear you. Now I can hear you plain as day. But I agree with you. I agree with you there. When it comes to where the Grizzlies are in the draft heading into next year, obviously, you know, there's a lot up in the air when it comes to do the Grizzlies keep Jaw for a little bit more? Do they move on from him? Obviously, if they move on, you need
gone.
That.
Stop it. He's gone.
He's gone. Man, okay, so him being gone, you know that point guard position needs to be filled. Who are you looking
A-Cuff.
At?
You can get A-Cuff.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because I was right there with you. I was going to think A-Cuff, I think if you did get that number one pick, are you looking at an A.J. DeBonza? Are you looking at a Darian Peterson?
You don't look at Peterson, because that dude, I think that's just wrong with him. But you can get A.J. DeBonza, or if Boozer's in the draft, do him. Or A-Cuff, but I would not go with that guy, Peterson. You know, something just not right with him, and I would not take any chances with him.
Okay, yeah, I think that's fair, absolutely. But so with the Grizzlies, obviously the biggest thing that hurt them this year, besides the fact that they just had no players all year long, was also the fact that they did not have a big. Is there any bigs coming out of this year from college that you have been maybe keeping an eye on, or maybe that the Grizzlies should be looking at?
No, because of the way of college basketball and basketball in general has been doing, bigs really have not been developed. Most of the bigs are out on the wing shooting threes now. So, you know, that needs to be a new development, or they need to pull it up so they can actually get somebody. You don't have to be a big, just have somebody who can consistently rebound at that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anybody in the NBA right now that maybe is going into free agency that you'd like the Grizzlies to maybe look at to bring over to help back up Zach Edey?
Right now, it's not true, because with all the capital assets they have, the only way they're going to get somebody like that is use some of that asset to bring somebody in.
Yeah.
From an existing contract, that's going to be their best option.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. It should be absolutely interesting, because I think right now, I mean, the Grizzlies, obviously, the whole message was trying to tank, so I guess we'll just wait and see how that is. I know for you as well, you're also all over Tiger basketball, and one of the biggest things that we found out was the signing of Cello Jackson and Fred Smith Jr. What can you tell us about these guys coming in to join Penny Hardaway?
That's going to be a good start for Memphis, because, one, Fred's going to give you somebody that the people can actually identify with. People, because the last couple of years, the biggest criticism of Memphis basketball is we don't know who these people are. But now you got two players coming in from Memphis that's going to that people know that they can identify to. And these two guys are not one-and-done guys. So not only would they be here this year, they'll be here for next year and the year after, you know, hopefully that they don't get in the portal if everything goes right for them.
Hmm. Yeah, that's and especially, I mean, you can never be too sure with how the portal has been shaping up. What have you made of the transfer portal with college basketball and just really college sports in general? Because I think the overwhelming consensus is that it's a little bit out of control. And I know Donald Trump signed this petition to kind of help limit that. Well, I mean, what is your stance on the portal?
Okay, my thing with the portal is I've always said this, you know, I have no problem with the NIL or freedom of movement, but yeah. My thing is I have a problem if I would give everybody one free transfer and then after that you have to stay out a year. Then that would stop all this going back and forth. And also, too, yeah. They need to get some uniforms. They need to try to somehow get a collective bargaining agreement. So when a team leaves from a lower conference, that team who trained him and developed him gets something out of that. Because, you know, basically they just being – minor league system for, you know, the Power Four, because they just, if you look at a lot of those Power Four teams, look at the Michigan team.
Yeah.
The Michigan team was built on transfers. Everybody came in, that team was transferred. But every team they left did not receive any benefit from them leaving. So there needs to be some type of, you know, repercussions for those teams that help develop these guys and, you know, can get a piece of that pie.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there, and I think there's definitely got to be something to get into place to kind of get some order established with all of this thing, because like you said, I mean, the dominating teams are the teams that are going to have the most money, that are bringing in all these kids and really forming these super teams, and that's clearly what you saw from this year. Terry, we got to hit a break real quick. Are you good to stick with us through the break and meet us on the other side?
Yeah. I even got a tanking suggestion for you, too, out there, Brent.
Perfect. That's exactly what we'll talk about. All that comes your way next, right here. Don't change the dial. You're listening to Happy Hour with Landon and Jayham.
Broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studio, we are Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now, back to Sports 56 Happy Hour with Johnny Radio. This hour brought to you by MemphisMoldInspector.com. Here once again is Johnny Radio. Skip, skip, up the road, up
the school you go. Don't be a bad boy, well, Johnny. We've got a few minutes left here in the first hour of Happy Hour, and we are talking with Terry Davis about all of these things. And Terry tells us that he has a solution for this tanking problem, or at least he has a suggestion, which we are all ears for. Terry, what do you got for us?
Okay, what I got is the bottom three teams, you know, get less odds than the three teams above them. Then it means people will continue to win, and then the teams that don't make the playoff but make the play-in, they get an extra two-way player that don't count against their cap. So that incentivizes you to get to play in and get an extra player, you know, you can develop. Then the bottom three, and they incentivize them to go try to win games to get to the middle three so you can get more options and more ping pong balls to win. Because the ones below that get lower odds than the top off, than the ones that's not there.
Yeah, I agree with that, because I think obviously right now, obviously the huge problem with tanking is that really from basically this entire year is that you witnessed a third of the NBA teams immediately say, well, we're not going to make it to the playoffs. So now let's start, you know, playing all these bad players. I mean, the Grizzlies, for example, had an NBA record of starting more than 25 different guys as their starting roster this year, which I don't think is a record that anybody should strive for or should strive to break, because it's a terrible product on the field. I mean, you looked at who the starting five were for the Grizzlies against the Jazz, and in these past few games, you can't really name anybody who's on the court right now, and nobody wants to go pay and see those kind of players. So any kind of incentive that is out there that forces teams to drive to want to win more, like you were saying, I mean, you really can't go wrong with any of that kind of stuff, right?
Exactly, because some teams started tanking even before the All-Star break, even before they would eliminate the playoffs. They just said, look, let's just try to lose, and try to get the best player in the draft. And even though this draft is coming up, it's really, really deep, and you really don't have to tank this year because you can get somebody decent at the number 12 and number 16 pick, because that's how deep this draft is this year, you know, potentially. So this is not the year you should be tanking, because one, it's not a number one stopper in there, but you got a bunch of good, consistent players in this draft, which is going to make it less tank worthy.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you there. So anything that we can do, I'm sure the NBA is listening and they're taking down notes and jotting down everything that you just said. So we're definitely going to give you credit here that you said it first on Happy Hour, because we need to give you credit there. So with the NBA playoffs coming up right around the bend, who do you like for the West?
San Antonio. You know, I've been saying all year that Oklahoma City is not going to compete. You know, between San Antonio and Denver, I put them in the conference finals, and hopefully San Antonio can get a ring, because I like Wendy.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you've got a team that's basically got OKC's number and they've had it all year long, it's kind of hard to bet against a team like that. What about the East?
Ain't about a football.
Okay. Well, I don't know how much that is shared here, because I think Boston's had one incredible year, one that I don't think anybody was anticipating. But always, Terry, it's a joy talking with you. I know it was a little bit shorter today, but, man, coming with that knowledge, talking about all that kind of stuff, we love having you. So you have a good one, all right?
Anytime, my brother. Talk to you later.
Absolutely. That's our man, Terry Davis, talking about all things with the Grizzlies. I mean, look. The fact of the matter is that obviously tanking, huge issue, huge problem, and something needs to be done about it. I mean, the NBA at certain points throughout the season tried with fines and tried to do something to punish these teams who are outright doing stuff that just, you know, went against everything the NBA stands for. But I've also heard a lot of our texters, I've also heard a lot of people basically say the NBA right now, the product on the court, outside of some of those teams, like the teams that are in the playoffs right now, the product is just not good. It's not good on the court right now.
It's not good because people are not geared to win. I mean, we have a season where 8 teams finish with 55 or more losses.
Never been done.
Never been done to this year.
It never should be done.
Never should be done.
But
like TD said, you had teams that were pretty much tapped out and giving up and just in tank
mode
before the All-Star break.
Before the All-Star break, yeah. Which is insane. I mean, you have all of these All-Star players. You have all of these starters that are sitting out because they're just like, well, season's a bust. We're just going to go away with it.
It's honestly a deeper-rooted problem, but we have to get to it a whole nother time.
We will. And maybe we'll do that on the other side. Don't you dare touch that dial. You're listening to Sports 56, 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.